Hi, I'm Mark J. Franklin.
Hi, I'm Vincent J. Hooper.
Hey, this is Michaela Brewster.
Hi, I'm Sharon Washington, and you're listening to the Call and Response Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Call and Response Podcast with me, your host, Felicia Fitzpatrick. I cannot believe we are kicking off season 6 right now. I cannot believe it. When I first started this podcast back in 2017, I don't think I thought about what it would be like if we ever went 6 seasons strong. You know, I had a dream. I was passionate. I was adamant about highlighting and spotlighting the incredible work and the incredible Black artists I was seeing on Broadway. And in the larger performing arts scene in New York City. And I just didn't think there was enough coverage of their work and of their craft. And so I just ordered 2 microphones and dove right in. You know, I literally wanted to amplify these voices that I felt like were too quiet. And so now here we are, you know, it's been almost 3 years since season 5. After recording over 100 episodes in total, we went out with a bang talking about artistic freedom with 5 Black artists in June 2021. So much life has happened for me personally, and I'm sure you and our community of theater and Broadway and the performing arts and entertainment, and of course the world at large. But to quote Sister Mary Clarence in Sister Act 2, it is a brand new day, ladies and gentlemen, a brand new day. So I appreciate your patience. And if you're a new listener, we're happy to have you here. Buckle up. It is a fun ride. And I'm excited to be back. I'm excited to continue to amplify these voices. And I think because of how much has changed and evolved and shifted, we'll have new conversations, but you know, we'll be able to reflect on everything that's happened thus far and look towards the future and continue all of this momentum. So let's talk about the podcast alums and what they have been up to in the last 3 years, because baby, they have been booked and busy, okay? Here are just a few headlines that you may have seen during these past 3 years, and if I forget anyone, I apologize, because truly there have been so many, and I try to post them on the Instagram, but y'all, I cannot keep up, which is an amazing thing to say. But you may have seen that Bradley Gibson starred in the titular role of Hercules at Paper Mill Playhouse, or that Nathan Lee Graham took audiences way down to Hadestown as Hermes on the Hadestown National Tour, or that Jocelyn Bio adapted Shakespeare's Merry Wives of Windsor, setting it in South Harlem, and Saheem Ali directed the production for the Public Theater's Free Shakespeare in the Park, and then it debuted on PBS as a part of their Great Performances Broadway Best lineup. We've seen Gerald Caesar in season 3 of Only Murders in the Building, and we've seen Larry Owens crack us up in Abbott Elementary. And we're just getting started, people, okay? Because Jesse Hooker Bailey was at the world premiere of Devil Wears Prada in Chicago. Dr. Lisa B. Thompson became the co-host and co-producer of KUT's Black Awesome Matters podcast. Plus, she celebrated the 25th anniversary of her play Single Black Female. And she's wrapping up a run of The Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body at the Vortex Theater in Austin, Texas. Zurin Villanueva wrote a book called Stay Booked, The Rules of Business on Broadway, and is starring as Tina Turner in the national tour. In 2022, Black Women on Broadway, which was founded by Jocelyn Bio and Danielle Brooks and Amber Amon, hosted their inaugural awards honoring podcast alum Lynn Nottage, as well as Queen Jean and Carrie Young. Crystalyn Lloyd starred as John Adams in Roundabout's all-female/non-binary revival of 1776. Danae Benton starred as Peggy Scott in HBO Max's The Gilded Age, which is still going strong. Dwayne Perkins co-wrote and starred in the feature film version of The Blackening, which was based on the comedy sketch we discussed on his episode. Brittany Johnson finally got to be Glinda full-time. We were all waiting, making her the first Black actress to do so. And Nikki Renee Daniels was the first Black Bobby in Company on Broadway. Douglas Lyon saw his play Chicken and Biscuits premiere on Broadway, directed by fellow podcast alum Jalen Levingston. And Cody Renard Richard just basically took over Broadway. I mean, I love seeing his name everywhere, from being a Tony-winning producer now to starting his stage management cohort. This man is doing it all, and we love to see it. Broadway Advocacy Coalition, which include 2 podcast alums on their co-founding board, Britton Smith and Adrian Warren, won a special Tony Award. And in that same year, Adrienne Warren won her own Tony Award for Best Leading Actress in a Musical for her performance as Tina Turner, which was iconic. Jordan Donenko was nominated for a Tony Award for his performance as Sir Lancelot in Camelot. Saheem Ali was nominated for a Tony Award for his direction of Fat Ham. And Michael R. Jackson, who was our fourth episode in season one, not only saw the opening of his musical A Strange Loop on Broadway, which we talked about in the podcast, you have to go back and listen to it, but he also won the 2022 Tony Awards for Best Musical and Best Book, plus he had won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama in 2020. Jordan E. Cooper was nominated for Best Play and Best Featured Actor in a Play for Ain't No Mo, which y'all know is one of my faves. And he made history as the youngest Black playwright on Broadway when Ain't No Mo opened. And then Jay Harrison G. won the 2023 Tony Award for Best Leading Actor in a Musical for Some Like It Hot, making history alongside Alex Newell that night as the first non-binary actors to ever win Tony Awards. And now we have already made it to the 2024 Tony season, where Jocelyn Bio and Whitney White were just nominated for Jaja's African Hair Braiding. They're nominated for Best Play and Best Direction of a Play. And if either of them win, they would be the first Black woman in their category to do so. And just the other day, Ebony Booth won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama for her play Primary Trust, making her the fourth Black woman in history to do so. Wow. See, that was a lot, right? I was not lying. And that was not a comprehensive list. Again, that was not a comprehensive list. Those were just some of the exciting headlines we've seen since 2021 featuring podcast alums. And as you can see, there's a lot of history-making moments in all of this and a lot of firsts, right? Because as Black artists, we come up on these moments of being the first, since diversity and representation and inclusion have really become a priority these days. And we have to balance that with celebrating these milestones, but also saying, huh, it took this long? And we're still seeing the ripples from the racial reckoning of summer 2020. Like in the fall of 2021, when seven plays by seven Black playwrights took Broadway by storm, including Thoughts of a Colored Man, which was produced by podcast alum Brian Moreland. And while hearing these accomplishments back to back is incredibly impressive and certainly worth celebrating, we know that life is more than the highs of recognition and accolades. When you commit to a life of creativity, you commit to unpredictability and unknowns. You commit to feeling deeply, and you commit to fostering a sense of connection between you and the audience, no matter if you work on stage or beyond the wings. Since life has changed for all of us over the past few years, I thought we were due for a catch-up episode. We are all ever evolving and ever shifting. So I reached out to a few podcast alums about how their lives have changed since their podcast episode aired. First, we'll hear from Mark J. Franklin, a photographer who truly has the range, okay? He shoots everything from editorial portraits to Broadway production photography, and quite honestly, everything in between. He was our 12th episode, airing September 29th, 2017, when he was the principal photographer and photo editor of Playbill.
After working there for 5 years, I left and went on to go photo edit for NBC News, which was really, really wonderful. It was nice to get to broaden my horizons, cover more than just theater, but bring a focused sense of storytelling, a focused sense of direction, and how to amplify, highlight, the news in digestible chunks in the same way that theater is. And the arts is conveying a lot of ideas, emotions, thoughts, news for audience consumption. So I did that. And then I struck out on my own. I decided to go full-time freelance. So in that sense, you know, it's been hard to identify one specific concrete highlight or milestone. But more so than anything, it's just been a pleasure to continue to learn and grow and push myself, especially through all of the tumultuous times that we have had as a country, as a society, and also just as a person. You know, life can be up and down, and so to keep progressing throughout that feels really good. I feel like I've become a lot more grounded. I'm typically a bubbly person, and I feel like I have not lost that, but I have rooted it, right? Like, I can still be myself and at the same time, in my artwork, kind of bring a little bit more stability, a little bit more consistency to all of it. I think what that kind of really entails on just a technical standpoint is honing my visual voice in a way that is still my personality, but has a little bit more texture, a little bit more depth, and a little bit more of a perspective. But I feel like the biggest shift is just my approach to photographing. I approach it with a sense of empathy and really trying to get to the root of each event, person, spirit, whatever. I really want to tell that story. And you can do that in an editorial grounded way. So it doesn't have to be as big as telling a story, say on a stage, but really every person, every event has its own arc, its own energy, its own light and vibe that comes from within. And instead of just capturing the surface level, I really wanted to understand that that event and document it in a way that puts the viewer of my images in focus. Yeah, and that's been a really fun journey to do. I've made sure to, you know, as the world keeps spinning, I've made sure to similarly make time for myself. Just because the world is spinning doesn't mean I need to run as fast as it is spinning. I can have time for reflection and to settle and feel grounded in my art, in my craft, in my life. And that's been really nice. So I think what is next for me is in 2024, I want to create better and more than I ever have. I want to be in more spaces where I previously thought I couldn't be. I want to not just be in those spaces, but I want to bring myself to those spaces, because when we show up, we influence. And this year is one that I'm calling Mark's Year of Ambition. So wish me luck.
Mark's Year of Ambition mantra has held true. Broadway's Uncle Vanya and Hell's Kitchen were just two of the projects he worked on this spring. Actor Vincent Jamal Hooper was our 16th guest, his episode airing October 28th, 2017. Since then, he was in the And Peggy tour of Hamilton and made his Broadway debut as Simba in The Lion King. I got to chat with him about that experience.
It was, you know, it started off pretty innocuous. I got a self-tape request from my agents, and I didn't think much of it because, you know, auditions are just part of the gig, so you're kind of like, you do them and you send them off and, you know, into the ether. And so I did it, thought nothing of it. And then I happened to go see New York, New York with my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. At the end of the show, for some reason, I turned to her and I said, before the end of the year, I'm going to be on someone's Broadway stage.
Yes.
And and she was like, okay. And I was like, I have no reason why I said that, but I just felt it so deeply. And then maybe a few days later I got the call back for Lion King. I came in, I did that. It was for like the associates, and it went well, like, you know, sang and did the scene, and they were like, can you come back later today to dance? I was like, yeah. Came back and danced, and then they had me try on the mask. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you know, giving me sort of coaching me through how you use it. Mm-hmm. And they took a photo of me and they were like, okay, yeah, wait outside for a bit. And I was like, okay. And came back out to me and they were like, so you're gonna come in tomorrow for Julie Taymor and the vice president of Disney Theatrical.
Oh my god.
And I was like, oh. So I came in the next day and, you know, they kind of put me through the ringer. It was like, you know, singing Endless Night over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, do the scene, and I'll put the mask on and do the dance twice. And
yeah.
It was just, like, all over the place. And I finished, and they were like, okay, are we are we done with Vincent? And Julie was like, for now. And I was like,
mysterious.
I was like, okay. And so that Friday, they had me come in for a work session, and it was just the music supervisor and casting.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was waiting to go in, I looked around and I was like, there's nobody else here.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And I tried not to read into it because I was like, maybe they scheduled it so that, you know,
right,
we don't see each other, whatever. So I went in and we spent the hour that I was there, we spent about 45 minutes just talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 15, they were like, all right, let's like record In This Night. And just, you know, they like made some tweaks. There were some things that Julie wanted to hear. And yeah, send that out. They're like, we're going to send this to Julie. And I was like, okay. And they were like, thanks so much. Like, you've been great. And I was like, cool. And I just left. And like, that was it.
Right.
Cut to, I think it was the following week, 2 days before my birthday, May 18th. I was up playing video games with my girlfriend, having breakfast, just like chill.
Yeah.
Looked at my phone. I was like, oh, I have a missed call from my agents. I should call them back. And we had kind of been like, you know, waiting with bated breath for mm-hmm. a call, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason in that moment, I didn't even think about it, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pick up the phone. I call them back. They're like, hey, Vincent. I'm like, hey. They're like, we got everybody on the line. I was like, cool. We want you to hear something. Okay. A moment of silence. And then it just goes, nah, and they're like, you're going to be the next Simba in Lion King on Broadway. And I was like,
that's iconic.
What?
Yes.
What? Like, it's just such a crazy, surreal moment. Like, my first thought was, are they really going to let me do this? Mm. yeah. It was just so, and like, immediately then it's like, you know, you sort of, they give you the first little bit of details about what's about to happen, and then I was like, okay, I got to call Q and Trey, yes, and that, and I just like started yeah, hitting people up, yeah, and being like, yo, we out here.
Right.
Yeah.
What was that debut night like? You grab the vine and swing on. Like, what were you feeling in that moment? Do you remember?
You know, the interesting feeling that I had on that day, like the hours leading up to the performance, was actually not even like I think I kind of expected maybe there was going to be this like rush of like adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And but I was like, oh, it in as gracious a way as I can communicate, like it felt like a kind of lateral move.
Mm-hmm.
In that I was like, oh, this just feels like what's supposed to be happening next. Like, yeah, yeah, it just felt, I guess, like such a natural transition. But that first entrance was so, I have footage of it actually, but I
yeah.
swing on and I landed and I'm like, it means no worries.
Yes.
And you know, it's just like, and I was not expecting any sort of response, but it was like,
gah! A roar.
And I was like, oh.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's epic. That's like, that's a moment you don't forget, I feel like.
Yeah.
As long as you live. We recorded your episode 2017.
Oh my gosh.
Can you believe that? Can you? I really cannot believe it. So thinking back to then, where you were in your life, where you were in your artistic journey and career,
mm-hmm.
if you could go back and, I don't know, give yourself advice or say anything about where you are now, what would you say?
Mm.
Or maybe nothing.
Yeah, you know, at least at the place I'm in now, I'm a big believer that, like, you're guided everywhere you end up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're guided to those places for a very specific purpose. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
I'd be like, nah, just leave this kid alone. Yeah. You know, he'll figure it out. Yeah, because I'm like, oh, if you, you know, it's that butterfly effect. It's like, oh, if I just move this, you know, fork on the table, then all of a sudden it's like everything just kind of shifts.
Yeah,
nothing that's meant for you is ever going to pass you by, so I'm like, just let it go, you know, keep moving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Period. A message in a word.
Vincent is now working on his own music. His debut single Hero is now available to stream. Michaela Brewster is what I'd call a social media extraordinaire. Airing August 17th, 2018, she was the guest of our 37th episode, where we talked about her social media strategy for Hamilton, which she worked on while at Marathon Digital. She continued to do that through the pandemic, and now she tells us what's been happening since.
Honestly, a lot. A lot of my life has changed over the last few years. When we last spoke, I was living in New York. I was working at Marathon Digital and was an account manager running social media for Hamilton and Hadestown and all these shows that had these incredible fandoms that I loved being able to create content that represented, you know, the show that they loved and gave them more opportunities to engage in that love of this show. And then the pandemic hit, which I'm sure is a lot of our transition points. But that was a moment where I said, all right, I know that I have my dream job. I know that I love what I'm doing here. Is there another dream? Is there something else that I want to be doing? And during that time of reflection and kind of thinking through, you know, if I had another dream, what is that? I landed on that dream being traveling and finding a way to strike a balance between work and life. I think when work was stripped away from me because all of Broadway shut down, there was a moment where I was like, well, then who am I? Like, this is my everything. These are all my friends, my people, my community, my my work, my identity, my pride, everything, right? Wrapped up into work, which is too much to put into anything, especially work. And so I was like, I've always wanted to be able to live, you know, in all these different places and travel and, you know, kind of be immersed in cultures in unique ways that come from extended periods of time. And so the digital nomad life was for me. And so I started traveling first nationally and then internationally once it was, you know, the borders were open and it was safe to do so. And was doing that for about 2 years until I finally landed in Sevilla, Spain, which is where I am currently speaking to you from. I moved here in September, which was also when I launched my agency with my co-founder and one of my best friends, Chase Halen, and we started the social team. And so, yeah, we are a social media agency focusing right now in just organic social and, you know, really wanting to figure out how are we able to make the process of creating social media content more enjoyable for everyone around. You know, social media is my passion. I love it so much. And there were times over the last few years when I was like, I can't do this anymore. This is too all consuming, too overwhelming. It asks too much of a person. But yeah, I think I love social media so much. I want to have a career in this, and I love the creativity that comes from the platforms and the ways that people use them. I think my evolution as an artist or as a creative, you know, it's really been trying to figure out that balance between planning and the Virgo side of me that wants to have everything, every single duck in a row and know exactly what's going on. And, you know, the fact that social media doesn't work that way and that you need to be able to move quickly and jump on something. And you need to be able to plan for the resources to be able to do that. So I think, you know, I have really tried to embrace the two different sides of myself, the creative, the visionary, the one who's got big ideas and, but also the person who has the checklist in her mind and knows every single little step that it takes to get there. And so I've been trying to really embrace both of those sides of myself and figure out how can they work together? How can they complement each other instead of being this push and pull between, you know, do I feel prepared and do I have the flexibility?
Sharon Washington has been busy. She was our 24th guest, her episode airing April 20th, 2018, and we chatted while she was in the midst of her run as star and writer of Feeding the Dragon, her solo show about her childhood growing up living in the New York Public Library. The play went on to be nominated for a Lore Tell Award and become an Audible original, which Sharon shared with us was downloaded over 10,000 times and made the top 100 theater audiobook list. And that is not all. Listen to what else she's been up to.
In the past 6 years, there have been quite a few highlights, but the one that jumps to mind is I was nominated for a 2023 Tony Award for co-writing the book of the musical New York, New York. Crazy. I mean, it was my first time ever writing a book. It was such an incredible experience. It was all the things. It was highs and lows, never mind a learning curve. It was a learning, I don't know, ladder, whatever goes straight up. I mean, it was truly a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Because it was my first, also because I was working with legends, my co-writer, Tommy Thompson, David Tommy Thompson. Of course, the legendary John Kander, directed by Susan Stroman. The set was by Tony Award winner Beowulf Borat, lighting by Ken Billington. I mean, the list just goes on. These are truly legends at the top of their game, and I was brought on to help tell this story. What made it such a gift, aside from being in the room where it happens? Oh, did I forget to say Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote a couple of the songs for New York, New York? So, pretty incredible team. But what made this really special was that I was invited to join the creative team because of the work I had already done with the creatives on Scottsboro Boys, the musical. Of course, on Scottsboro Boys, I was an actor, but because of the unique situation of creating this musical, it was all of us, all of the actors, felt like co-creators. We took responsibility for the story. We all did deep dives into research. We helped create those characters. And being in that room and being in such an open room, and that's the environment that Stroman creates, is a really collaborative room. Stroman and Kander, and they're open to anything. There are no bad ideas, just ideas that don't work. All right, maybe there are some bad ideas. But it's such a safe space that you're not afraid to throw ideas out, and that leads to another idea, or that leads to a scene that wasn't there before, or a moment. So they really encouraged that, and that truly encouraged me to start telling my own story, which is how I ended up writing Dragon, as I felt like in that room, I became a storyteller. I became a creative using another part of my art. So I am a native New Yorker. My family goes back to Manhattan, 1835. So I was excited that the creative team, wanting to tell this story about New York like no other city in the world, with the iconic songs from the Kander and Ebb songbook, that they wanted to see the New York that I knew, that I grew up with, which is multicultural, multiracial, the languages I heard, just the sound of the streets. And so I brought an authenticity that they really relied on. And it was so exciting to tell the story of some of the folks that are left out of other New York City stories, the people of color, the Latin American experience, the Black American experience, the queer American experience. To add a little complexity to a story that is at once a joyous celebration of the city, but also about people's dreams and the dreamers, and it couldn't have been more relevant. So anyway, I've really learned to love collaboration, and that's where one and one makes more than two, when there are all of these good ideas. And I really, really love working collaboratively when you have people who don't have ego, or they're not precious about their work. It's all about making the best story and telling the best story possible. It's a trust process. It's very hard to trust yourself as an artist. It's hard to trust your instincts, and everybody is going to have something to say about a particular approach or a character or an idea. And that's also what I've learned and how I've evolved, is that I know when to hold my ground and when to let go. You have to be true to yourself as an artist. And if something is in a play, for example, I've written things and my director or my dramaturg or someone has said, well, I don't quite understand that. Is that going to be clear to the audience? Especially if I'm writing stories that are centering on the Black experience, the African American experience, my experience, the way I see the world, the community that I want to speak to and for, those untold, unseen voices and stories. Sometimes there's a word or a passage or something that may not be understood by the wider audience, but my community understands it. The people who I'm writing to and for understand it. So that's going to stay in. If there are two Black people in the audience that night, or 20 Black people in the audience that night, it's for them. I believe I've come to terms with the fact that art lives in the scary places, and that if you're not afraid, you're not growing. So I guess I've evolved to being more comfortable in the uncomfortable spaces. Not that I love it, but I know that you have to sit in that space to get to the other side, because that's what I experienced. And any of the work that I admire, or I am challenged by, or I am engaged in, is on the edge of that dangerous space. I know the artist has gone to a place which is a little scary. As a Virgo, I'm a bit of a control freak, and I remember my voice teacher saying back in drama school many years ago, and which I now know to be true, that you need to sit in those uncomfortable moments. I remember we were doing an exercise, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't understand. I don't know where I am. I'm just confused. I don't know what to do. And she said, what an incredibly creative place to be. And that's exactly right. If you're comfortable, you're never going to grow. If you stay in your comfort zone, you're never going to grow. Your dreams have got to be bigger than you even imagine. And I've grown more patient with myself. Not all the time. I mean, there are deadlines and there are times when you have to produce, but I've learned that I have to be gentle and sometimes be silent and sometimes put whatever I'm working on down and be okay with that and trust that it will eventually reveal itself. As an actor getting a little bit older, I get quite nervous about learning lines and the amount of lines, and do I still have the capacity to do that? So I'd remembered hearing about the last thing you put in your head before you go to sleep gives your brain something to marinate on. So I've gotten into the habit of putting lines in my head right before I go to sleep. And it seems to be working. So far, so good. And I've also applied that to writing. For me, I just started asking questions of my dreams, started putting a thought into my head, or a problem that I needed solved, a particular piece of writing or a story or something that I couldn't quite crack and just dream on it. And honestly, it has worked more than it has not.
I know it's cliche, but I feel like referencing Rent's Seasons of Love. How do you measure a year? And how do you measure 3 years? Hearing from these podcast alums and how their lives have changed and how they've embraced the pivots made me feel comforted. We are all always navigating transitions and life changes, and knowing other creatives are going through the same kind of thing reminds me that having a community to discuss these changes with makes it a little easier. And with that, season 6 has officially kicked off, y'all. We are back in the habit. I can't wait for y'all to hear the stories and journeys of this season's guests. Until next time, y'all.